Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name's Kerry Stevenson, and today we're talking with Sovereign Metals. The ASX code for Sovereign Metals is SVM. Managing Director Julian Stevens joins me today. Julian, we're going to be talking about Sovereign Metals. Before we get started, I have to say the product, ladies and gentlemen, is rutile. I knew nothing about rutile. I had to do a little bit of, educating myself about what it is, but it's really interesting what you've got. Many people won't know who Sovereign Metals are and what rutile is. So can you give us, to start with, just a brief overview, who you are, where you are, and what you've got?
Sure. Thanks, Kerry. So Sovereign Metals is obviously ASX listed explorer and hopefully future developer. We are operating in Africa in the smallish Southeast African country of Malawi. And we've discovered what we believe will be the largest rutile deposit in the world. It's relatively
the largest
early stage.
Rutile deposit.
Yes,
in
we think
the
it
world.
Will be. We think really? It will be. It's currently the second largest, but you'll see. But we're continuing to drill and find more, so we believe it will end up being the largest deposit in the world. And look, in terms of the commodity itself, so rutile is a titanium mineral. It's the purest natural form of titanium, if you like. And this mineral is used for two products generally. Number one is it goes into pigment, and that so anything that you see that's bright white, paint, sunscreen, white plastics, even toothpaste, and other food products, titanium is a component, and then rutile is used for that.
Is that rutile behind? Because I think it's quite amusing. That's rutile behind you in the picture, which is black, correct. And you're saying it's
correct.
All this white stuff.
Exactly. So once processed in the pigment-making plants, it becomes this very bright white pigment.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. So, and the second use of rutile is in the welding industry. It goes into, if you've ever looked at a welding rod, mm-hmm. It goes into the flux, which is the material that coats the welding rod. So that's a significant market for this product as well.
Okay, so before we get into Malawi and your deposit, let's just talk about the market for rutile. Because I guess it's a mineral sand, is it? Would it be under that sort of area?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Correct. Right. So mineral sands, rutile traditionally occurs in mineral sands deposits.
Yep.
For example, companies like, let's say, Iluka, a large Australian mineral sands miner. And those mineral sands deposits usually produce three products, being ilmenite, which is mm-hmm. a low-grade titanium mineral, zircon, and rutile, being the high-grade, high-specification titanium mineral. In our case, we would be producing just rutile. The rutile will be our primary product and none of those other minerals.
And does that make it more valuable because it is just rutile?
Yes. So it's, I wouldn't say more valuable. It probably makes it a simpler process.
Okay.
Producing a product for just a couple of key markets, unlike a traditional mineral sands producer producing three products that might be going into five or six or seven different industrial markets.
Okay, well, most of us know, the copper market, the gold market. I mean, people know me as the gold nerd, and we know the price is there, and we kind of know the market. But what's the rutile market and the prices like at the moment? Is there a supply-demand issue at the moment? What's the market like?
So the market at the moment is in significant supply deficit, and the reason for that, I guess, is there's a number of mature mines in the world, and their rutile grades are decreasing as they continue mining. Mm-hmm. Like really any mine, you mine your highest grade first and then you move into your low grade material. So the other point is there's been no major really big rutile discovery, I guess, for about the last 50 years, the last one being obviously Sierra Rutile in Sierra Leone. So,
and that was discovered 50 years ago?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, about half a century ago. Yeah, exactly. And there's been no very large primary rutile deposit discovered since then until now. As I said, that the market's in, I guess, extreme, it would be fair to say extreme supply deficit at the moment. Both the pigment producers and the welding industry are short on supply. And we've seen significant price appreciation in both of those markets. So the longer term markets are dominated by the bigger pigment companies. We're seeing prices of $1,200 to probably $1,350 US dollars per ton, up from about $1,000 a ton, US dollars a ton a year or two ago.
Are you serious? That's crazy.
Yes, it is. But in the welding industry, where you're selling, I guess, which is significant, but there are much smaller buyers. Normally you'd sell to a trader, and that trader would sell to the smaller welding rod manufacturers. But we're seeing prices of up to $200,000 a ton in that part of the industry. So really, you could break it down into a long-term price and a spot price. So your long-term price or your contract price at the moment, you're probably looking at $1,300 US a ton. But your spot price, you're looking at $2,000 US a ton. So that's that spot price up from, you know, $1,300 a ton, say 12 months ago. So really extreme supply deficit, and there's no subs in the welding industry. There's no substitute for rutile either.
Right. Okay. So let's talk Malawi. So you've got this deposit. Sure. It's a discovery that you made in 2020. Is that correct?
Correct. Very early 2020. Yes.
Okay. So here we are 18 months down the track. What have you been doing to get it to this point? And were you surprised when you came across this discovery?
We knew there was rutile there. We knew there was rutile in the area, and we thought there was potential for a significant deposit. But we have been surprised at how big and how high grade this deposit is. You know, to be honest, as an explorer, it's probably beyond our wildest dreams.
Really?
What we found is it's unbelievable. You know, huge, high grade, all that surface, in a commodity that's in significant supply deficit. So
I can hear the excitement in your voice. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this man is also on his final day in quarantine. So 14 days in quarantine. And look at him, he's still excited because you've just come back from Malawi.
Yes, exactly. I spent a few weeks in Malawi. So, and we were actually lucky enough to have the Minister of Mines there visit us and observe some of the drilling. We also run our own laboratory on site, and the Honourable Minister was able to visit that as well. And we were able to explain to him what we're doing there.
Well, speaking of the minister being on site, from a jurisdiction point of view, is Malawi a good place to operate? Are they pro-mining? Are they looking at what you're doing and seeing the long-term, I guess, upside for the country? Or, you know, I don't know enough about Malawi.
Sure. Not many people do. So you're not Robinson Crusoe there, Kerry. So, look, I've been working in Malawi for actually 15 years on a number of different projects.
Okay.
You know, and basically it's a small Southeast African country. It's an ex-British colony. It's traditionally been dominated by agriculture, the economy there. However, in recent times, or I guess the last decade or so, the government's really wanting to diversify their economy, and mining is one of the areas that they see potential in, and we do as well. Obviously, there's only one commercial scale mine in Malawi, and that's Lotus Resources Kalekera uranium mine, which is currently on care and maintenance, which Lotus relatively recently purchased from Paladin. And they're doing a feasibility study to get that restarted when uranium prices improve.
Yep.
And a few other sort of advanced exploration / near development projects in the country. But you know, as I say, I've been there for about 15 years. The government has been amazingly supportive and helpful for us, despite, you know, their relatively limited resources. So it's a great place to work, fantastic place to work. The other, while we're on Malawi, another key point is that Malawi is landlocked. However, we are fortunate in the infrastructure we have there, because the project is actually only about 40 kilometres away from the capital city. And so this means we've got a rail line, about 10, operating rail line, about 10 kilometres away from our project. Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of fresh water, which obviously you need for these type of projects. And all of the obvious labour available, just from the nearby capital city, skills and labour available, and also, you know, traditional mining equipment. There's a cat dealership just 30 kilometres away from our from the project site. So, you know, quite a handy location and great infrastructure.
I just have to ask the question because I don't know. What's the capital of Malawi?
Oh, so the capital of Malawi is Lilongwe.
How do you say that?
Lilongwe.
Lilongwe. Lilongwe.
Correct.
And, good one. And you're 40 Ks from Lilongwe.
That's right.
I know it's early days and we're going to get into where you're at with the scoping study, et cetera, but
sure.
When the time comes, do you have to put a lot of infrastructure in place?
No. So I mean, no real mine site infrastructure, outside of mine site infrastructure, I should say. The only thing that we'd have to build is probably rail siding, because we would
tag onto
10 or 15 kilometres trucking, put it on the rail, and then off we go. But no, not too much additional infrastructure will be required. So we're, you know, very lucky there, very lucky.
Well, it's clear that you're pretty excited about this. So I want to find out from an investor's point of view, you've got a scoping study underway at the moment. Just talk to me or talk to us about where you're at with that.
So I guess the scoping study is in full swing now. We've appointed all the key consultants, being the key engineers, metallurgists, mining, environmental, et cetera. So that's I guess, in full swing. We've got a major site visit underway next week. A lot of the consultants will be heading to site, not from Australia, but from South Africa. At this stage, a bit too hard to come from Australia.
Yeah, and just to point out to people who may not understand the terminology of a scoping study, it's really just to find out the economics of the project. That's right, isn't it, Julie?
Correct. It's a study you do before you launch into a feasibility study, really. So it's a higher level study to look at the economics from a high level. So we will be that, as I said, that's in full swing, and that's targeted for completion in November this year.
Okay.
That will be a key milestone, obviously, and people will be able to see the potential economics of the project that we have.
So where are your primary markets going to be? Because, you know, it's early days, ladies and gentlemen, so it's scoping study and feasibility studies to come, et cetera, but as you said right at the start, this is at the moment it's the second largest deposit in the world, and the largest deposit was found 50 years ago. So as you said earlier, this is going to grow and potentially become the largest.
Correct.
What markets are you targeting and where are they? I mean, are you doing China or Europe or the US?
So, look, mainly Europe and the US. These are where the main sort of Western pigment producers are. So our pigment, you know, the component of our material that we sell to the pigment market will go to Europe and the US. And the component that we sell to the welding industry, well, the welding industry sort of isn't centralised in any way, so it occurs on all continents. So all continents, including China, North America, Europe, etc.
I was looking at a recent announcement, I really want to bring this up because I didn't understand it, and perhaps you can help us as investors understand it. some of the grades, because you talk about high grade, and you know, we understand grades with gold and copper, but in rutile, what is a good grade versus a high grade?
Okay, so a good grade would be about 1%. 1%. I would say if you're looking at rutile as a as the primary product, and a high grade would be something over about sort of 1.4% or something like 1.4 or 1.5%.
And what do you find? Yeah,
so to put in context, our current resource is 644 million tonnes at 1%, but that also includes a high grade component of about 140 million tonnes at 1.4%. So it's really that 1.4% material that we'd be looking to mine or form part of the mine plan, at least for the first sort of 20, 30 years or something like that. And maybe a long time down the track, you could go into that, some of that, you know, lower grade or 1% material.
Julian, it's really interesting to understand that there is such a supply, a demand, a deficit at the moment with rutile. But as investors, what we want to find out is your share price has been very, it's grown and it's increased quite a lot over the since the discovery. Why do you think now is a good time for investors to get involved with Sovereign Metals and what you're doing?
Sure. So look, we've found the largest rutile deposit in the world. Now you know, I can't say that in print, but it's clear. It's the second largest at the moment, as JORC resource. And once we do another an updated resource estimate, it's clear it will be the largest rutile deposit in the world. It all going into a market that's in significant supply deficit. We've seen really substantial price rises in rutile, both in the pigment market and in the welding market. So a really compelling industrial minerals project going into a market that's in, let's say, extreme supply deficit. So we don't see those high prices, you know, falling off anytime soon. And we've got significant offtake interest in this product, basically meaning that we'll be able to sell every tonne we produce at a good price.
Are you able to indicate what you think the mine life might be for this particular deposit?
Well, it's so big that it will be a multi-generational mine. There's no question. Oh, okay. For modelling purposes, though, we normally will in projects like this that are so large, we'll probably only model 20 or 25 years in the scoping study. But for all intents and purposes, it's nearer forever mine. And there's no doubt there'll be more found as well in the area. There'll be more rutile than what we know about. There'll be more found. The geology is similar for, you know, a much larger area than we've drilled. So we know there'll be more as well. So,
and drilling is ongoing as we speak today.
Correct. So, yes, drilling's ongoing for two purposes. One, to continue expansion of the resource, and two, to upgrade some of the resource to the JORC indicated category so that we can use that for the scoping study.
There is a lot of news coming out, and congratulations. I'm looking for you. Send me a note when you become the largest rutile deposit.
I will. I'll be sending a lot of people notes then.
And you know what, after 14 days in quarantine, you're still absolutely excited about what you've got. You're just back from Malawi. So welcome back to Australia, and
thank you,
good
Karen.
Luck with getting out of after 14 days locked up. And thanks for joining me today on Small Caps.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.